Good morning, I'm Elizabeth Harrison in Providence. A proposal to raise the state income tax by 2 percentage points on people earning more than $250,000 a year will be considered this afternoon by the House Finance Committee. A coalition of advocates is calling on the General Assembly to raise the top income tax rate in Rhode Island from 5.9% to 7.9%. The outlook for the bill remains uncertain. Legislative leaders have reacted coolly to the idea of raising the state income tax. There may be progress in the debate over where to bury the body of Tamerlan Tsarnaev, one of the brothers accused of carrying out the Boston Marathon bombing, and the husband of a woman who grew up in North Kingstown, Rhode Island. Bruce Gellerman reports that funeral home directors in Worcester met yesterday with a member of the Tsarnaev family.
It's been almost 3 weeks since Tamerlan Tsarnaev was shot by police and run over by his brother in Watertown, and still no cemetery acceptable to the family wants to bury the body. But yesterday, Worcester Police Chief, the funeral home owner, and Tsarnaev's uncle met, and police spokesman Kerry Hazelhurst says they made progress.
As a result of the meeting, all parties are confident that there will be a solution found within the next couple days.
Cemeteries in the state, the region, and overseas are being considered.
That's Bruce Gellerman reporting from Boston. The Rhode Island Board of Education has two controversial items on its agenda for this evening. The board will begin the meeting with a discussion of the state's graduation requirements, which say students must meet minimum test scores to graduate starting in 2014. The policy has generated heated criticism from some students and advocates who say it's unfair, and the Department of Education says the board scheduled the discussion after hearing complaints about the new testing requirements during its last meeting. The board also plans to discuss a policy that would allow police on state college campuses to carry guns. The policy would allow each of the state's three institutions of higher education to make its own decision about whether to arm campus police. No votes will be taken at today's meeting. It is a discussion session only. The commission charting the redevelopment of about 20 acres made available by the relocation of Interstate 195 has a new executive director starting work this month. As Rhode Island Public Radio's political reporter Ian Donis reports, the vacant land is viewed as a source of economic growth in Providence.
Jan Brody was chosen after the I-195 Commission conducted a six-month search. She's due to start work as the commission's executive director May 20th. In a statement, Commission Chairman Colin Kane says Brody was chosen because of her background and her ability to realize the economic potential of the I-195 land. Since 2008, Brody has been the Northeast Regional Director of a real estate development company in Boston. Before that, she was an executive for a Providence developer, the Army Revival Company. Brody has advanced degrees in business and architecture. Initial road and utility work recently began as part of the redevelopment of the former 195 land. Specific plans for the redevelopment of the vacant space have yet to be chosen. Ian Donis, Rhode Island Public Radio.
And the U.S. Department of Agriculture wants to help Rhode Island recruit more low-income kids into its summer food program. About 50,000 Rhode Island children receive free or reduced-price meals during the school year, but only about 9,000 show up for the free meal program meant to help them from going hungry over the summer. So the USDA is helping the state get free meals to more kids. That's in part because of the multi-year recession.
Today we bring you the story of Denise Dallaire, a woman who served 10 years in prison, and then abruptly, just a few months ago, she was freed by the very same judge who sentenced her. Denise Dallaire was convicted in 2003 on a minor drug dealing charge, but because of mandatory sentencing laws in effect at that time, she got slapped with a 15-year prison sentence. When her sentence was reversed, the judge actually apologized to her, and we asked Denise Dallaire to tell us her story. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Let's start at the beginning. How did you first end up in a Providence courtroom?
Well, my charge was actually out of Westerly, Rhode Island. At first, it was just a state charge, and the feds came and picked it up. So I was, obviously, you go to the federal Providence courtroom.
And what were you charged with?
I was charged with possession of crack cocaine and regular cocaine, which in the end, I had 14 grams of crack cocaine.
Describe what was happening in your life at that time. I mean, were you a career drug dealer, or what led you to that?
I was dealing drugs. I made some horrible decisions in my life. It was a long time ago, but yes, I was dealing drugs. I was going to school. It was like I was living a double life. I mean, that's pretty much it. I was dealing drugs for the money.
And you had 14 grams of crack cocaine on you.
Right.
And how much is that? Is that a lot?
Fits in the palm of my hand.
And as you're sitting in this courtroom and you're hearing the judge hand down a 15-year sentence, you're just 26 years old. What was going through your mind at that moment?
Well, I spent 6 months in the Rhode Island State Prison awaiting my sentencing. And that whole time, actually, my attorney advised me that I was getting about 5 years. 5 to 6 years. 1 week before my sentencing date, my attorney came to me and he told me that they wanted to offer me 18 years. I was just basically in a state of shock. So I had 1 week to pretty much sit with the fact that they were giving me 18 years. And of course, I got the downward departure of acceptance of responsibility, which left me with 15 years, 8 months to serve.
And what happened that led you to get that sentence? Had you been arrested before?
Yes, I had two minor charges. I had one possession charge when I was younger, again, a small amount. I also had an assault charge, which I was involved in a college bar fight. We were intoxicated. We went to court the next day. None of us pressed charges against each other because just a big misunderstanding. But my charges stuck because I was on probation for the first minor drug charge. And then comes along this minor drug charge, and they labeled me as a career offender. That's how I got the high sentence.
So after a minor possession charge, a relatively insignificant bar fight where no one else pressed charges,
right,
this additional drug charge suddenly left you with a 15-year sentence.
Correct.
And so you find yourself now in Danbury Prison in Connecticut,
mm-hmm,
in a population of prison inmates, many of whom, as you just said, had committed very serious crimes. That must have been,
right,
extremely difficult.
With the majority of them, these serious crimes definitely had at least half the time that I had.
Really?
Yes, there was murders that had less time than I had. There were manslaughters that had less time than I had. There were rooms full of drugs that had less time than I had.
I can't even imagine what it must have been like to go from being a student to suddenly finding yourself in a prison and a facility that's not just any prison, but a facility for really serious offenders.
Well, I think my main thing at the time was I was in such a state of shock of the time that I received. My main thing at that time was to study my case. It was something I wasn't going to accept. I just lived in the law library for the first, I think, 2 years of my sentence.
So you were looking for ways you could change the outcome for yourself.
Exactly.
And what else did you do to pass the time while you were in prison?
Oh, my gosh. I had 3 jobs. I did a lot of volunteer work. I organized a lot of volunteer events. I organized every activity in Danbury. That was my job, actually.
Give me some examples.
Every holiday, which is difficult for the women, I organized some kind of show to distract them, to get their minds off not being at home with their families. So we did shows, we did karaoke's, we did, you name it, we did it.
And Denise Dallaire, over the time while you were in prison, was there ever any moment when you thought, okay, this is it, I found a way to get my sentence changed?
Well, I mean, there was hopes that I had in discovering certain things. You think, oh, it's right here in the books, and this is a definite, and you file it, and they're like, no. I mean, it's very hard to fight the federal government.
And now, when the U.S. Supreme Court came and said these mandatory sentencing rules under which you were sentenced, they can't be mandatory anymore. They can only be guidelines now. What were you thinking when you heard that?
I was happy, of course. I was like, I'm maybe not going home, but I'm definitely going to get a break in my sentence. I'm going to get time off. Of course, for everything that comes out, they have these stipulations. Okay, this is the law, but these people are not affected by it.
So you're in prison, you're organizing events for, you know, the other inmates and just trying to keep your head up through all of this. And one day something happened. Somebody noticed you and said, you don't belong here. Explain a little bit how that happened.
What had happened was Judge Gleason is a New York federal judge. Well, he has a class that he brings up every year to see post-sentencing effects. And what it is basically is they choose about 3 of us from Danbury to go sit on this panel and talk to the students and just just tell them our stories and what had happened to us. It was nothing in reference to pleading your case. It had nothing to do with that. But I think after just so many years, Judge Gleason said, you know what, your case deserves some attention. And long story short, these lawyers took interest in my case, and they were wonderful. They helped me.
So after having served 10 years, one day your lawyers come to you and they say, we think we found something. We think that we've found a way.
And they told me, do not get your hopes up. We're not sure, et cetera, et cetera. So again, I did not get my hopes up. I didn't tell my family. My mother was very sick. So basically, 6 days later, after my attorneys came to see me, I had a court date for a week later, which was amazing.
And all of a sudden, you find yourself in front of the same judge who sentenced you 10 years before that.
Yes.
What were you thinking? Were you angry with this judge when you saw him again?
Of course not. I've never been angry with him a day in my sentence. It was his job to follow the guidelines. And, you know, at the sentencing, he said, I do not want to sentence you to 15 years, but I'm bound by the guidelines.
So you're now in Judge Ronald Lager's courtroom again, and what ended up happening?
He spoke about the guidelines. He was always against them. He wanted them to be advisory.
Not mandatory.
Right, not mandatory. He apologized.
What did he say?
He said, I'm sorry for sending you away for 15 years. I was just amazed that he was saying it. Yeah, I was crying uncontrollably, of course.
What has the impact of this whole experience, this extremely tough sentence, been on your family?
It has been very difficult. That's the thing that has hurt me the most, how I've hurt my family.
Since you got out of prison, your mother has passed away?
Right. I spent 11 days with her and she passed away.
So, I mean, do you feel thankful that you got to have that time with your mom, or angry that you were robbed of all the other time you might have had with her?
I can't express my gratitude for that time that I had with her. I am just so happy that I got to spend that time with my mother. I have no anger.
It seems like there was this amazing combination of this judge from New York, a problem that was found in your original sentencing that allowed you to be freed, although you'd already served 10 years, so that's quite a long time, but allowed you to be free, you know, not to serve a full 15 years. But how do you feel about the fact that there are other people convicted under similar mandatory sentencing rules who are still behind bars?
It breaks my heart. Again, as I said before, I have met so many wonderful people in Danbury, believe it or not, and that's just one prison out of so many. Of course, there's people who deserve to be there, and there's people who these laws wouldn't even affect. But there is many who are left behind. That's why I'm really adamant about speaking my story, telling my story, speaking about it. I just want to do all that I can. I just feel so strongly about the federal system and the harsh sentencing laws.
Well, Denise Dallaire, thank you so much for sharing your story with us.
You're welcome. I'm glad to share it.
I believe that peace can be found in the midst of strife.
I believe in evolution.
I believe in friends who can make you laugh so hard you cry.
This I believe.
I'm Frederick Reamer, host of This I Believe Rhode Island. Renowned author Anne Lamott once wrote, "It's funny. I always imagined when I was a kid that adults had some kind of inner toolbox full of shiny tools. The saw of discernment, the hammer of wisdom, the sandpaper of patience. But then when I grew up, I found that life handed you these rusty, bent old tools." Doesn't it often happen that we have to depend on the simplest, most primitive things in our lives when times are tough? Well, that's exactly what happened with this week's essayist, 13-year-old Jeremiah Matos.
I'm a quiet person. I don't always appear that way on the outside, but personality-wise, I can be the quietest person ever. As a young child, I was withdrawn. I had no one to talk to. I had a school counselor, but I felt I couldn't trust her. My family, I couldn't trust them either. The only thing that took me out of my shell was playing football. Football took my mind off of everything, like family drama, school fights, or things that would happen at home and spilled over to school. I was a lonely 7-year-old, without many friends, and without a favorite teacher because I never raised my hand. All I had was football, and I wished for so much more. Then something horrible happened. My football coach was shot and killed outside of a club. When the words "he's dead" came out of my mother's mouth, I couldn't think straight. Coach made me the player I am today. My mind was set on a bad path, depression, punching walls, and thinking about death. I was overwhelmed with anger, but told myself that acting like this wouldn't change the situation. So I picked up a pencil and drew my feelings out, drew them out to the point where there were so many powerful memories in my drawings. After that, I would draw in school, after school, before school, even at night when everyone was asleep. Whenever I had the chance to draw, I would use it. People wouldn't see my face outside of my notebook. Some of my drawings were sad, some happy, and some dramatic. What I drew didn't matter. When I drew, it was magic. I wrote characters in my drawings into action and created short stories. I wrote enough to make a book that only I can read. Reading it reminded me about both the negative and the positive parts of my life. I believe a pencil can be a savior. My pencil saved me from being rude, violent, and uncontrollable when I lost my coach, friend, and father figure. If I hadn't found that pencil, I may not be reading this to you right now. That first pencil was ultimately used up and thrown away, but the memory of it means so much to me. That pencil showed me that bad things happen, but life will go on. That pencil showed me how to survive.
Jeremiah Matos is an 8th grade student at TAPA, Trinity Academy for the Performing Arts. He's a visual artist, dancer, and filmmaker. As you hear in his This I Believe essay, Jeremiah loves exploring the root of his artistic side and appreciating how a simple pencil changed his outlook on the world. To offer your own essay or to listen to previous segments, we invite you to visit the This I Believe Rhode Island page of our website, ripr.org. For Rhode Island Public Radio, this is Frederick Reamer.